Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm going to talk about four Quranic surahs today. All four of them are Meccan surahs. All four of them are the first four Meccan surahs of the fifth group. They are Surah Saba, Surah Fatir, Surah Yasin, and Surah Safat. As we have seen all along in the description of the Quran, the Almighty has arranged the surahs of the Quran in such a manner that they are divided into seven groups, such that each group has its own definite central theme, central idea. All surahs of the group are describing more strongly and emphatically the contents of that central idea, apart from many other subjects also. And this particular group of the Quranic surahs, which is the fifth group, although talks about all the subjects that we find discussed in the Quran in detail, like the topic of the life hereafter and the reason why there should be a life after death, the question of prophethood, why have the prophets and messengers come, and what are the answers and responses to the allegations and questions raised by those who deny the possibility of prophets coming. And the Quran more significantly talks about the unity of God, the fact that there is only one God, the fact that this entire existence was created by Him, and it is only He who is running the affairs of this world. The concept of unity of God is an important concept of the Quranic message. And this particular group of surahs, that is the fifth group, is more clearly and strongly emphasizing the understanding of Tawheed than any of the other important and popular subjects of the Quranic message. Surah Saba is the first of the surahs of this group, and it emphasizes the significance of the unity of God and condemns and criticizes shirk, which is polytheism, which is just the opposite of monotheism or Tawheed, by emphasizing the fact that the people of Mecca, who were the immediate addressees of the message of the Quran, they ascribed partners to God and sometimes believed that the other creature of God Almighty, other than humans who are free and who are being tested by the Almighty, that is the jinns, who are in most cases invisible for humankind. Some of the people of Mecca used to take them as partners to God because of the feats that the jinns could achieve for them, because of the fact that they could not see them, and yet they were able to do things for them which were strange, which were miraculous, which were unexplainable. The Quran in Surah Saba has explained that it is only God who is the in charge of the affairs of this world. As far as jinns are concerned, they were subjugated by some great prophets. They were given in the custody and in the service of great prophet Sulaiman alayhi salam. And the Almighty emphasizes the fact that if one is thankful in his nature, then the attribute of gratefulness leads one to believe in one God and to be grateful and thankful to Him. But if we ascribe partners to God, we are being ungrateful to Him, because we are expressing our feelings of thankfulness to someone who is not our benefactor, not our creator, not the one who is helping us out in our hours of need. The Quran talks about the fact that, for example, Dawud alayhi salam, a great messenger of God, on the one hand, was given by God Almighty all the blessings of the world that one can imagine. He was the king. He was the one who was given extraordinary abilities, and yet he was thankful to God. If one is inclined to accept that whatever one is possessing and is able to do is because of God's mercy, then it's only then that one can be thankful and grateful to God. And Dawud alayhi salam was one of them. And on the other hand, there were people belonging to the kingdom of Saba, the queen Sheba. And they, despite the fact that God Almighty had enabled them to have a very vast territory of kingdom and had number of blessings which many other nations did not possess, yet they were ungrateful, and the result was that even in this life the Almighty inflicted his punishment on them. And they, after having been wealthy and happy and affluent, they turned out, they were changed, transformed into a nation that was unhappy and which was in desperate need of resources because of the calamities that they were given to face on grounds of them being ungrateful. Surah Saba also emphasizes the fact that the Almighty says that the whispering of Satan turned out to be effective in the case of many humans. The Almighty says that Satan was able to confirm and prove right his claim that many of humankind would follow him. And it was declared by the Almighty that if there are going to be people who would follow Satan in the manner he is leading them astray, then they are not going to be eligible for God's grace, his mercy, his forgiveness. The Quran mentions in Surah Saba that there were people who used to make fun of the Prophet by saying that, should we tell you about a person who claims that after we will all be destroyed into pieces, إِذَا مَزَّقْتُمْ كُلَّ مُمَزَّقٍ, you are going to be made to return. They used to make fun of the Prophet. And the Quran says that despite the fact that this allegation, this questioning in the form of derisive and mocking way was hurled at the Prophet, he always used to respond by giving answers which were exactly in accordance with what the intellectual reasoning required in the questions was. And the Quran answers by saying that indeed, when God has created man, he has the ability of requiring him to return into existence after he was dead. So all in all, although Surah Saba talks about the stories of some of the earlier prophets, it talks about the fact that there is going to be a life hereafter, yet it also talks about, more importantly, the subject of the unity of God, which is the basic spirit of the entire Quranic message. Surah Saba is followed by Surah Fatir, which again is, of course, a partner surah of Surah Saba. And the basic theme is again Tawheed, is again unity of God. But in this surah in particular, what we find is that the Almighty is clarifying that the angels are not God's daughters, as was thought of and conceived by the polytheists of Mecca. They are humans, they are creatures of God, and they are creatures of God Almighty like any others, like us humans or jinns, except for the fact that the Almighty has required them to go through a process of delivering his orders in various different forms. They are creatures with wings which are in twos and threes and fours. God creates the way he chooses to and the way he likes, and he requires his creatures to do things the way he ordains them to do. In Surah Fatir, the Almighty has talked about a number of different signs that he has spread across in this world to enable people to look at them and to marvel and to appreciate the greatness and the strength and the wisdom of God Almighty. These are the signs which the Almighty has spread across for everyone, but not everybody is able to look at them and to learn lessons from them. The Quran emphasizes that, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَ اللَّهَ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ الْعُلَمَاءِ, Indeed, it is only those who know truly what the reality of this entire existence is. It's only those knowledgeable people who really fear God. And the Quran talks about mountains and the mountains with different colors, and the fact that the heavens and the earth have been created by the Almighty, and the fact that it is only He who is enabling the sky not to fall on earth, and the other bounties of the Almighty that have been provided are provided by Him alone and nobody else. And this description of the various phenomena of nature is made in particular to emphasize the fact that anybody who looks at his surroundings with an open mind, with open eyes, is bound to appreciate that everything that we possess, is from God. And God is worthy of being thanked, of being worshipped, and nobody else. Because there is no other existence in this world who is enabling us to survive and to take care of our needs. It is only one God, it is only one existence who is doing all this. And it is therefore most ungrateful of humans if they, aside from God, are inclined towards respecting and prostrating before and worshipping non-God deities who are either non-existent, or if there is anybody who attributes divine attributes to certain non-God deities while he is making a false claim. Surah Fatir and Surah Saba both are talking about the same subject, that is unity of God. On the one hand, Surah Saba is negating the fact that the jinns do not have any divine attributes. On the other, Surah Fatir is talking about the fact that angels too do not have any divine attributes, the attributes which are possessed only by God Almighty. In Surah Yasin, which is the next surah, what we find is a beautiful, effective description of almost everything that has been talked about in the Quran. The prophethood of Prophet Muhammad, Allah's mercy be on him, and the other prophets, the fact that God Almighty is going to ensure that the life hereafter gets underway, the fact that man has come to this world for a trial, the fact that man goes through the trial in various different stages, is born as very feeble existence, and then goes through the process of gaining strength and grows in age and matures into a grown-up, fully strong person, and then goes on to the next subsequent stages of getting feeble and weak, and ultimately he dies. But that is not going to amount to the end of his life. It's only a different form of life that he is transferred to. And then ultimately, on a particular day, all humans are going to be given a new existence, a new form of life, when they'll all rise again and they will talk to each other, saying that we lived in the earlier life for hardly any time. We lived there only for a day or even for lesser time. This they are going to do because they would realize the time that they had spent in the past in their graves or in the worldly life was hardly really significant, important enough for them to take it seriously. But the problem with man is that while he is living in this worldly life, he tends to take the worldly life a bit too seriously, ignoring all the future possibilities of life. But on the day of judgment, when man is going to rise from his graves, he is going to exclaim in anguish, in surprise, and in despair that even though he did not expect another life to be a reality, the reality has already started to begin and has dawned upon him. In Surah Yasin, we find that the Almighty begins by saying that the Quran is a testimony of the fact that it is a book of God, and that the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, is the messenger of God. The surah begins by saying, Yasin wal Quran al Hakim, innaka la min al mursaleen. This is Yasin, and the wise Quran is a testimony of the fact that you, O Messenger of God, are a messenger, are from God. That is, the fact that the book Quran is from God is convincing, is wise, gives instructions, teachings, information which is unchallengeable, which seems to be from nobody other than God. This book in itself is the biggest proof of the fact that Muhammad, Allah's mercy be on him, was the messenger of God, and that because the book is brought by him and he presents it to the mankind, everybody who receives this book ought to know that the bringer of this book is no one but the Prophet of God. Surah Yasin carries a lot of significance as far as the entire Quranic message is concerned, because it seems to be a gist, it seems to be an effective summary of the presentation of the Quranic invitation to mankind to believe in God, to believe in the life hereafter, and to believe in the prophets, to believe in the reality of this life, to believe in the fact that all blessings are from God, to believe in the fact that once after we die, we are going to be created again for another life, which is going to be the ultimate life of success or failure, which is going to last forever. The next surah is Surah Saffat, which again partners with Surah Yasin to complete the pair. This surah too, like all the surahs of this fifth group of Quranic surahs, is emphasizing more than anything else the unity of God, Tawheed, the oneness of God. And this surah also begins by describing the fact that the angels, they stand before the Almighty in rows, in a way that they are completely disciplined, and nobody has the right to move ahead of whatever boundaries that they are given to operate in. In other words, if the people of Mecca, the polytheists, are under a misunderstanding that the angels are going to come to their rescue on the day of judgment to help them out if they are going to be declared failures in the court of God Almighty, then be absolutely sure that this expectation is false, because the angels are following nothing but the dictates of God Almighty. They stand quietly in a disciplined way in rows in order for them to get orders and instructions from the Almighty, so that if anybody is pinning his hopes in the intercession of angels, he is very seriously mistaken. Surah Saffat talks about the blame-shifting exercise which the people who will be declared failures on the Day of Judgment will do with each other. Those who led others astray are going to say that we were not the ones who asked them to do the wrong things and the wrong deeds. And those who were led astray would claim before the Almighty that they were misled, not because of their own volition, but because of the fact that their leaders, their elders, their religious guides were misled. And the Almighty is going to ultimately declare to them that no matter whatever they might say to each other, all of them are indeed complete failures in the eyes of God, because each one of them was provided with an opportunity to understand the message of God, to understand what the truth is, to understand what the reality of this life is, but they refused to pay heed to what the Almighty said to them through his messengers and through the nature that he had spread across around them. And also indeed, they were not able to take seriously the voice of their own conscience. They did not use their mind, their hearts properly. They did not reflect in a manner which they were expected to. Surah Saffat, towards the second half of its description, talks about a number of prophets of God who showed their devotion to only one God in one way or the other. So that we find the description of Musa alayhi salam, Ilyas alayhi salam, Nuh alayhi salam, and many others. But indeed, the most effective and the most prominent description in this particular surah is the description of the life of devotion of the great prophet of God, Ibrahim alayhi salam, who was chosen by the Almighty to go through a trial which was an exceptionally difficult trial. It was a trial whereby the Almighty required Ibrahim alayhi salam to see a dream wherein he was as if sacrificing his own son, the only son, Ismail alayhi salam, for the sake of God. Of course, it was a dream which was not required to be interpreted literally. But Ibrahim alayhi salam, despite being a very intelligent man, was more God-fearing, more devoted to God and his love than he was intelligent. And therefore, his passion for God, his love for God, his fear of God inclined him to interpret the dream literally. And he shared the contents of his dream, which he saw not just once, but on a regular basis. He shared the contents with his son Ismail alayhi salam, who encouraged his father to do what he had understood literally for the sake of God. And thus it so happened that the greatest of sacrifices man can ever imagine was about to take place, wherein the young Ismail alayhi salam bowed down and Ibrahim alayhi salam prepared himself for the extremely difficult task of using his knife to sacrifice his son Ismail alayhi salam for the sake of the Almighty. And when he was about to do the task, that the Almighty exclaimed and said, "O Ibrahim, qad saddaqta ar-ruya." It seems as if you have literally done what you were required in your dream. And he appreciated understanding, the move, the sincerity of Ibrahim alayhi salam. And the Almighty says, وَفَدَيْنَاهُ بِزِبْحٍ عَزِيمٍ, and we replaced, compensated for the life of Ismail alayhi salam by requiring a certain sacrifice to be done from that day until the day of judgment, in the form of the sacrifice of goats and animals, which we all do during the Eid of Adha and during the Hajj season. So that this sacrifice was a supreme act of devotion of Ibrahim alayhi salam for his God, and likewise many other prophets did in their own respective ways pay tributes and homage to the Almighty, the one God who is worthy of being worshipped. So all these four surahs are actually emphasizing the same point, that God is one and he is the only one who is worthy of being worshipped. There is no other God except him. May Allah Almighty enable us to understand the message of his book, the message of Tawheed, and may he enable us to follow it as best as is possible.